Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oehler, and I will be your host for this program. This is part two of my conversation with Lea Schönfelder. Here, we speak about her personal life, and we also share insights that she has gathered, especially also some of mine, in our careers, in our thinkings, in our experience. There is also a part one where we speak about Lea's career and her professional life in detail. Feel free to listen to that one before or after part two. Either way is fine. You will find part one on the podcast platform you're listening on right now. So if you want to, hit that subscribe or follow button. In part two, this one, we talk about the combination of systems and art and how Lea found a creative and professional home in this overlap. We also talk about how we experience the purpose of gaming. And then Lea elaborates on her creative process and on her games, her ideas. And it's really a great insight and great fun. So I hope you enjoy listening to part two of my conversation with Lea Schönfelder. All right. Hey, Lea, and welcome back to part two.
Hello, welcome back.
Long time no see.
Exactly.
Okay, so in part one, we talked about what you do, what you did, what you're going to do. Let's talk a little bit more about who you are and life and all the good rest on part two. Are you ready?
Yeah, my pleasure.
Cool. Well, the first interesting question for me is always, how and where did you grow up? What was your upbringing like? What did you experience?
Well, my upbringing was quite standard for a German girl, I would say. My parents were both teachers, and I was growing up in a small industrial city in southern Germany. It wasn't very glamorous, but I had everything I needed, and I could do whatever I want. So I was pretty happy. The only thing maybe in... Well, related to this podcast, as we're talking about games, was that in my house, I mentioned it briefly in the previous part, in my house, computer games weren't really a thing. They were smiled up on, and my parents thought, oh yeah, computer games make you stupid, and better if you play board games or go outside or learn to play the piano. So that's why I sometimes feel like I don't have the same games literacy that maybe a lot of my colleagues would have, and I'm a bit like I don't agree with this assessment that my parents had at the time at all. I think it was a quite elitist view as well, and they of course didn't see all the good games that there were. But on the other hand, I think it gives me sometimes, and this is a good thing and a bad thing, it gives me this outsider perspective that maybe I am thinking or bringing different things to the table than someone who knows every game that was released since 1985.
Yeah, I think it's certainly unique and clearly standing out part of what you're doing, which again, all the visions, what you believe your games should and will be like. We talked about that in part one. Yeah, it's so interesting. I've heard the story from you now, and I'm always wondering, well, but were you... Like, how did this conversation come up? Was it just in passing? Because it's such an explicit story point of yours that you know, and you said you weren't really a gamer. So did you try to game, or did you express the interest in games, and did you get it like explicitly prohibited, or how did this conversation about video games, was it just there? Was it just a thing your parents liked to talk about, that games are stupid randomly? Like, how did it come up? And did it like stand in your way, or how was that like?
No, I wasn't explicitly prohibited to play games. It is just an observation that I made in retrospect. I don't think that at the time I was missing too much, but at the same time, I'm thinking now there is a lot I've missed just about this medium, because I was encouraged to look at all kinds of different media. Like, we would go to a museum, I would watch movies, read books, go to the dance theater, what have you. But just this one medium that I ended up working at was kind of not existent for me. I wasn't explicitly forbidden to engage with it, but it's maybe I was too nice of a girl who always did what their parents said. So for me, it was just never an option to do.
I see. So if we go into that in a moment, and just regardless of games or not, there was always a lot of culture and art and creativity in your life, as far as I hear, because I was wondering about that, because of course now you're, you know, you've been a designer and you're the creative partner of Fine Games and so on. So the creative seems to play a very significant, the creative and the cultural, I feel like, seems to play such a significant role in your life.
Yes, you can definitely say that. So I was very interested in drawing and painting. And that was also my career choice when I came out of school. So I went to art school and wanted to become an illustrator. Then a funny story, my professor said, "Oh, you're too bad at drawing. Go to the animation class." So I went to the animation class. And somehow I also didn't really make it there. And I only felt home when I made something interactive. And it stuck with me. And I found it so interesting that you can express an artistic thought in form of a system rather than a linear story or a painting or a drawing. And I just think that it suits me and, my creative personality very well.
Tell me about the artistic thought in a system. I think that's so interesting, such an interesting premise.
Well, maybe I can pick up the example of Perfect Woman, which is an independent game that I made towards the end of my studies. It's a dancing game, so you play it in front of the Kinect, and you have to perform dance moves as good as you can, as well as you can. And it's an ironic game, and it's called Perfect Woman, but it's actually really, really difficult to become the perfect woman, because if you choose all the perfect life choices, then the performance becomes super hard and you're not gonna succeed. So you will only succeed if you go for a more mediocre version of your life. I hope that I have brought this across well enough that you then see that the message, which is, don't try to be perfect all the time, is actually ingrained into the system of that game. So that's what I mean by conveying a thought with a system.
Yes. And I watched like a little Perfect Woman video in my research for this, and I really encourage anybody who hasn't seen that to look at that, because it's hilarious, because you have to like as far as I saw it, you, if it gets too hard, you kind of have to turn yourself into a pretzel, and it's quite uncomfortable, like physically, yeah. Right, and that's like, yeah, the message of the game. So I think that's hilarious, and Yeah, and unusual to use the Kinect for that, I guess. Or maybe I haven't just not been in touch with these kind of games. But okay, so that's art in not just a linear story or a singular point like a painting, but in a system and something that's interactive that moves. And that's where you found your home.
Yes, yes. And I really still feel at home and in this. Which is amazing because I think I have a lot of different interests, but somehow a game stuck with me. And another point that I find that's really fascinating, and I at least haven't experienced in any other way, is that there are so many different disciplines connected to games. Like it has sound, it has visual art, it has some logic behind it, it's interactive. Yeah, that's even just working as a game designer is pretty amazing because you are, at least in smaller teams, but you're in charge of more than just one thing. Your brain is challenged by so many different questions. Like it's logical, but it's also emotional and it's also visual. It's pretty good.
Pretty good. So when did you first discover video games?
So I don't want to lie. I do have some early experiences with it. Like I remember playing Tomb Raider in front of the computer with a few friends. Like I think we were five. I have no idea where we got the game from because I think it was even at home. Or Roller Coaster Tycoon we also played. But then that was pretty much it. And then I only got in touch into games again at the time when I started making games myself. So in the first part, I was chatting about how the very first game that I didn't really call a game even back then, but I called it an interactive animation. We would send it to the festival in San Francisco where we met all the other game developers. And that was for me the starting point where I saw games as a cultural movement, I think, and where I thought I want to be part of this. And there is a lot of cool people and there is a lot of good things. And there is also, maybe most importantly, so much that you can still do. Like so many games haven't been made yet. And I feel although games been around for decades, we still have so much more ahead of us. That was really exciting and is still really exciting for me.
Yeah. And I think that it is, and you mentioned this, and I think it's a cool storyline because, yeah, you have been really quite underexposed to games, I suppose, compared to the average gamer and game maker. Mm. And I think there is a huge... you call it outsider perspective. I think that's about right to what you're doing. So I think that's...
Don't say that. It still hurts.
Oh, it hurts you? I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. Just kidding.
It really
has those both parts for me, right? Because I don't... I actually think that it is important that you have some games literacy and don't invent the wheel for every single feature that you have. Like some things have just worked in the past and there is no reason why not to do it. So I really enjoy also working with people who have a lot of experience in those and bring things to the table that are standard for others, just not for me. So just wanted to reiterate.
Yeah, for sure. A little bit of conservative thoughts help to... Exactly, not reinvent the wheel all the time. So one topic that I wanted to discuss with you a little bit is the purpose of gaming, something that I care a lot about, I think a lot about. And, you clearly found, like we just said, a home in gaming and also a purpose in it. And then there is the story of which you and we obviously don't agree with. What your parents said, that it's like a thing worth frowning or smiling upon, that it makes you dumb, you know, that's not that. I'm mm-hmm. sure they had their reasons, but that's not true. Mm-hmm. Let's just say.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of gaming?
The purpose of gaming. Well, I think it has many purposes, and it probably it depends on the game you're playing. Like, I think it's a perfectly valid purpose for gaming is to relax and waste time. So I have no problems with playing Candy Crush quite a lot. But there is much more. Like, I think in, like, especially games, or many games like puzzle games or so, they challenge you, right? And I actually think games have made me a better human in some sense, because I learned to not give up on the first try. And you try something. I'm not a very skilled gamer, but one thing that I think, even if you're not skilled, that you learn is that you have to try and be playful with things. And if you do it long enough and often enough, eventually you will succeed. And I think that's a very good life lesson as well. other purposes, I mean, there are, I do enjoy personally to play some of the more, how would you call them? Like those indie games with a message. Like, I enjoyed, I enjoy playing the games that Mol Industria makes, or yeah, things like Papers, Please, or Edith Finch, or those type of things.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy?
I really like Papers, Please. Now that you mention it, the first time I saw it, I was like, "Wow, this is quite something." And I love the. And you also mentioned wasting time, and Papers, Please is amazing because it. First, it simulates a mundane thing, which very quickly does not become mundane at all, which is way too well done in this game. I can't even how you're like, all right, this is a fun game. You know, I have to like use my eyes and my mouse to kind of compare information. And then, well, I suppose I can do that. And then the guy comes with the bomb and it's like, and people die. Well, blimey, right? That's a real problem. And then, you know, it gets really hard and you make mistakes and you have choices. Mm-hmm. So, well, that's amazing. And then, as it just happens, the weekend that just passed, you could say I wasted it. I would say I didn't waste it, but I played probably across Saturday and Sunday, maybe like 19 hours, 18 hours of Dorfromantik.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. That hasn't happened to me in a while. I totally sank into that. And wow. I used to do that a lot as a kid. Speaking of purpose of gaming, it, you know, I believe that many game, well, for me, many games were like hero's journeys that you know weren't accessible to me in real life, you know, where other kids were like athletic, played football, made art. It's like I had real trouble. I always need help with things, so I didn't get the furthering that would help me do these things well. So when I was on my own, the computer was always my best friend to give me experiences, give me stories, give me challenges that I needed as a kind of skilled human and intelligent and so on, but that my surroundings weren't set up for.
Totally. I mean, I think in that regard, it does similar things than books or TV, maybe in an even more direct way, because usually you can interact, but it is, you can totally immerse yourself into different worlds, right? And that's a big appeal of games as well.
Totally. And you can like, and that's, you know, that's why I was so struck by you said system, right? Because it's like, well, this was always a good way to interact with the system. It's like, so I remember one of the big games I played was Gothic. You probably heard about it, right?
I don't know it, I don't think.
So it's a German RPG made by Piranha Games. Gothic 1 and 2 were there. They are very old. and like, well, 3D, fully 3D, and totally awesome world and great, hilarious dialogue with the real like German humor. And well, but also kind of ahead of their time and very clunky fighting and so on. So, mm-hmm. Which, but I loved it. It was such a buggy, weird game in some parts. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. it was really, for me, the, like, I could really beat that game in a way. And I did mm-hmm. a lot of, like, abuse where I, like, would corner some enemy in a corner and then I would do just the right attack pattern to kill the enemy. But the enemy was too strong for me at the time. So I got, like, way more experience than, you know, than I could maybe have at the time. So I abused that a little bit. And then there was also a huge thing about optimizing the experience points you get, or like, I think it was learning points that give you skill, because there was like in every chapter, this is very specific, but it's very like systematic. In every, like there were chapters, and if you would trigger a certain dialogue, you would go into a new chapter. Mm-hmm. And if you, that would kind of reset the world. So all the enemies would kind of respawn, but that would mean that you could optimize playing a chapter by killing as many enemies as possible to max out the total XP you could get. So in a way, there was like a limited amount of experience you could get, and thereby a limited amount of learning points. So you wanted to like really clear a chapter before you would move on to the next one. And for me, that's like crack for my brain. I really love that. That's like, I really like to optimize, but I had little opportunity, or I don't know, maybe I didn't see them in the real world. So it was a beautiful way of interacting with systems. At the same time, a beautiful story, but really good for my brain. And Dorfromantik that I just played was really good for my brain too. It was really a good good massage. Like, don't think about anything for this whole weekend and just look at these beautiful tiles and build a nice village area.
Super.
And for me, there's a lot of purpose in that, in these experiences that you can get that you can't otherwise really get. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a new way of experiencing certain aspects of life.
Totally.
Especially if you're like disadvantageous, if you're like in some kind of disadvantage, if you kind of don't get what you need in a way as a kid, that's how it was for me. But anything else you think about that?
Yeah, I was just thinking about what you said about you would get through games what you didn't get elsewhere as a kid, and how I kind of, well, I didn't have that experience, right? Because games were somehow not there for me. I mean, they were in the sense of I played board games, and I think even there I got some of that, what you mean. Like, I really enjoyed being in that flow and not thinking about anything else, but having this rule set, that this artificial set of rules that at the same time limits you, but also creates this kind of freedom in your head, because you just accept it and you don't question the rules. And for a short while, you're just absorbed by optimizing your behavior within this framework.
Yes, that's such a good way to put it. Yeah, it's a huge example of like discipline is freedom. Like a fixed set of rules creates a beautiful world. Very intuitive fact, but totally true.
I mean, it is in a way very... or a principle almost, I would say, that a lot of designers take on themselves, like in design or creative thinking, you also say you can only get creative when you have some constraints, right? Because there are those people who are considering creative work always as a form of problem solving, which I personally think there is more to it than just that, but it definitely helps to know where you're going. Like, a goal can also be a form of rule set that you optimize against.
How do you do it in your creative process? Do you use these principles, or how do you use them?
Yes, but I think the point when you are making your own game, which is what I'm doing right now, is that you are at the same time the maker of the rules as well as the one who works within them. And this can be almost difficult because you're taking two roles, and it is sometimes dangerous because you are bending the rules because you think, oh yeah, I want to really do this thing, but it doesn't really lead to where your vision should be. I'm trying to find a good example of that. Like in our current game, for example, we have three women who lived in different time areas. That is kind of one rule set in Germany. But then the other constraint is the topic. Like it is about how these women make decisions. And I have to be really careful because obviously German women in three different time periods, there would be so much to tell. You could talk about dating, you could talk about their jobs, you could talk about their childhood experiences. But I always have to keep focusing myself about, okay, this is about this existentialist question, really. How are you influenced to come to certain decisions? Or, and all the questions that come with it, like a person living in the Nazi era, for example, she would take less action herself, but be more informed by what society tells her. And then someone in the 70s tends to rebel more, and her motivation is almost to be against what everybody else says. And then the last person that we are designing is Hannah, who live in the 2010s. And she structurally has all the freedom that there is, but she lacks some personal vision. Like she's still not happy because she doesn't know what her purpose in life is. So yeah, and channeling all of that, you want to be concise, right? And you want to bring a point across. And I think you have to be, the art is to find a good balance between playfulness and mood and tone, but also honing into what you want to say.
And that's a real challenge, right? To get that just right.
Yeah, definitely.
I understand. Hey, it's nice that you bring up this game because I wanted to ask you about it. We've talked about it before, and I know that this game actually has a personal as your games do, right? Has a personal story with it that also pertains to your life or your ancestors. So, would you share that story with us? And let's talk a little bit more about what the game is about and these decisions and this agency that it talks about.
I'd love to. So, as I said before, I took inspiration from myself, but also from friends and family. And we have these three characters that I already said it live, one of them in the 1930s, one of them in the 1970s, and one of them in the tenors of this century. And they all have their challenges. And I want to compare the way under which they fight for their happiness. Right. And they have different circumstances that give them perceived different options to choose from. So Eva, who lives in the 1930s, in the Third Reich, she lives in a time, and I know a lot of similar stories from my grandmother. She lives in a time where she doesn't really take action. She does what she thinks other people want her to do. And it culminates in a story that is actually a true story of my grandmother, who described to me, oh yeah, when my husband asked me if I wanted to marry him, I thought I should say yes. So it's not, she didn't even marry him because she said, oh yeah, that's a really cool thing. She thought that she would be expected to say yes. And I think that's an amazing story that brings it to the point that, well, that atmosphere that was there at the time. And I mean, you couldn't go further. And it is then also really understandable that horrible things like the Holocaust happened if everybody was just doing what they thought others expected them to do, right? Like, it's absolutely mad to never take action on only act in tradition. Then in the 70s, you have kind of the opposite. You have, well, it was a time of the civil rights movement, right? And Sigrid is a rebel, and she rebels against patriarchal society. She goes overboard a little bit and at one point throws a stone at a protest and hurts someone who has a family and kids. And then kind of needs to reflect, oh, wow, is this really worth it? And then the third character is Hannah, who lives about 10 years ago, or you could say in our time. And I myself have that feeling sometimes, but it's also something that we see a lot, that it is almost difficult these days to find a clear purpose because we have so many options and it's really difficult to live for something. And then there is all these influences, I don't know, media and brands and science and religion, that it is, it takes a lot of effort, I think, to find your set of rules against which you want to play. And these are the three women that we're comparing. You will also learn afterwards that they are all relatives. So they are daughters of each other, and each generation wants to pass on what they've learned about their life, which was really important to me because all of these women, like even Eva, who supposedly always did what others wanted her to do, like even she was able to reflect and then say, oh, actually, for my daughter, I want to have something different. And the story is very personal to myself, too, because I have a daughter, too. And of course, I'm thinking about what do I want to pass on? And even what do I want to make of my own life for her to have a good example?
Yes, very good questions and a very beautiful story. And now I'm totally curious. Well, what do you want to make of your own life? What is the set of rules you want to play against as far, by the way, beautiful way of putting it, like set your purpose or something as the set of rules that you set. You know, that's the topic we're on. That's cool that it fits. So how far are you in that process, and what are the things that you would say you have, you person, real person, Lea, have already discovered and that you might want to pass on to your daughter? All that, what's that like for you?
Correct observation. Of course, I'm also still in the process here. But I have now, especially since I've found it fine and making this game, I am really happy with myself and where I'm at. And that wish to shape, I expressed it earlier, is really strong with myself. And I kind of want to show her you can make your own world or your own life. I mean, sometimes you have to see it in a more of a differentiated light as well, because obviously some people don't have that freedom. Some people have to go different routes or are encouraged to go different routes. Then the other question that I always ask myself is, what if you don't want it? Like, there must also be a good model for those people. I don't know, I'm choosing the extreme now, but what if you want to be a housewife and care for your kids? Like, I almost feel that these days this is the more rough route to go, because it's so, people think it's old school, but if we really want to be a free society, it should be possible as well.
For sure.
I don't know. I'm thinking about a lot of things in that regard, and also, of course, how to politically shape things. And And I'm trying to do my little contribution, at least within the company, and setting some examples that I think are good.
Do you have some examples? Something concrete?
How we want to work together thing, like, for example, that I don't think that you have to work 8 hours 5 days a week. So we are, for example, right now working, like, we're not even looking at the watch, but I have to pick up Clara at 3 p.m. That on the days that I leave, and I call it a day at that time. And my co-workers do the same. Yet I don't think that we are being unproductive. Like, I think we're being quite productive. Yeah. Another thing that I think is really important in these days, and this is a more personal thing, but we have to split that care work. So I'm not going to pick up Clara every day, even though I might have more time than my husband, but we have to distribute that work as far as it gets, like, ideally 50-50, of course. I mean, we all live in reality, so sometimes it's not possible, but that should be our goal. And I actually think that sometimes we can be, like, especially with these things, and they pile up during a pandemic, right? We see a lot of women are taking on more care work that's not well paid or not paid at all. Like, I sometimes think that we should even be a bit more regulatory with these type of things. Like, for example, making it a rule that not just the mom, but also the dad stays at home a certain time after you get a child, or at least heavily encouraging it. Mm-hmm. Because it's wonderful for the fathers as well. My husband did it and he really loved it. And we even took 6 months off together, which maybe wasn't very logical, but we had a great time. And I think it helped splitting up that care work and household work as well, because it wasn't me by default who would be doing it for a year. And then suddenly we had to rearrange and go, oh, now you take on this part of the whole house and I'm only going to do this one from now on.
Yeah, the togetherness in these things, I think, has a lot of beauty, and also, well, you call it maybe not logical, but then it's like, excuse me, by what set of rules, okay? And it seems for me at least totally logical. I think it's beautiful for children too. And so, yeah, well, I think these are, I think you said it in part one too, the bit about integrating family into work, and I think that's what you're talking about. And I think that's, that's something that now was forced upon everyone through the pandemic. But it seems like a noble cause. It seems like a more integrative path where it's not just one or the other and so disparate, but more like...
Yes.
Weaving together.
It's actually really interesting, because I remember that before the pandemic, home office, we call it in Germany, was something that people thought would just not work, right? And now we had to make it work, and it did, mostly at least.
Yeah. So one word you used a lot in what drives you right now is shaping. And I think it's a really nice word. And I was wondering what comes to mind for you when you talk about shaping. What does that mean for you?
It means to consciously do something, I think. As a creative, I think it comes almost a bit natural to you, because you have to create something from where there wasn't anything before. I think shaping, in the way that I use it, it goes a little bit further, and it's not just creating something from nothing, but also taking into consideration what's there already and working with that and reflecting on it and making it to the thing that you think works.
Yeah, I see. I think it's such a nice word to use for creating. Mm-hmm. It has a very tactile and visual thing with it, where you're like, can imagine like the forming a pot from clay or something, and you know, in all these revolutions, iterations of the turning thingy, and you know, kind of like in your hand, it molds into what you want it to be.
True, and I always try to find the right translation for it in German. In German, I use the word gestalten, but it's not mm-hmm. quite the same. So I think you're right. Shaping is more playful and more tactile.
Shaping, formen, maybe. But it's not as commonly used as not as flowy as shaping is. So very nice. Well, I feel an end coming. We talked a lot about this, but maybe in a peripheral sense. But I wanted to ask you this directly. Yeah. What does it mean for you to live a good life?
Oh, that's a very personal question. I think a good life is that you have a dream and make a goal out of it and try to reach it. I think that would be the goal. Or if I do that, I would be happy.
Very nice. It seems like you are doing it. So thank you so much for your stories. And thanks for the chat too. It was very inspiring.
Thank you very much. Yeah, really good chat.
Yeah, hope you had fun. Hope everybody listening had fun. And I am just going to reiterate for part two here where people can find you. So on Twitter, you're Lea Schoenfelder with only an O.
Yeah.
And then fine.games is your company on the web, and I believe also on Instagram, right?
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. That's that. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day and time and success.
Thanks a lot, Simon, and thanks everyone listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening to part two of this episode. If you haven't listened to part one yet, you could do that. And if you listened to both already, thank you so much. Please follow or subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you may be listening on, so you can stay tuned for many more exciting games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. So I see you very soon. Until then, take care, thank you, and bye-bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, Project Manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.